From the entertainment capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, it's Midnight in the Marshaverse, starring Marsha Warfield and her two sons, Stephen Roberts and Skills Hudson, as the problem child.
Good morning, good evening, good today, and good tomorrow. Thank you for joining us here at the Witching Hour between yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And this is where the magic happens here in the Marshaverse. The Church of Jesus is also in session. I am the resident theologian and comediographer, and we will be talking about that in just a moment. But right now, just like tradition, we are going to introduce our cannabis and cognac. This is the part of the show where we invite you to join us in whatever helps you chill, helps you calm down, and get away from that old 9-to-5 mindset, you know, and just chill. And so I like cognac. You might like jelly beans or a bologna sandwich, whatever. It's up to you. But I'm going to have tonight, since it's turned cold, here in Vegas. So since it's turned cold and we're into our little wintry thing, I'm going to have my my coffee drink. And this time we have some caramel liqueur and chocolate liqueur. And I'm going to add a dollop. Those are each a splash. This is a splash. I'm going to add some Hennessy Black, which is cognac made for mixing. I think it's kind of redundant, though, Hennessy Black, you know, since Black people, this is the official cognac of Black America. It's like black. So there you go. That's all we need. We're not trying to end up shit face on the freeway or nothing. We just want to take the edge off the day before we get into some real deal stuff. I keep my coffee hot in this. Pour it. Oh yeah, it's steaming. Okay. So now I'm gonna take a little sip. Because you know, when you get old, you get a little chill, got a little rheumatiz. That's the excuse we get. That's nice. For cognac, for cannabis, I have this neat little Ucan vape battery that I have loaded with a select cartridge of Maui Waui. So we're going to do a little of that, legacy strain. Back in the day when you used to get a lid for $15, we'll talk. And this heats up. It'll heat up and you can't really see it. But right now it's heating up. Take 10 seconds. And now we take a hit. Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's get this party started. Today, I want to talk to you about the fact that everything we know in your world, not mine, I'm in the Marshaverse. All these things don't apply to the Marshaverse, but in the world we all grew up in, everything you know is a lie. Everything you've been taught, whether intentional or just, you know, deliberate, it just happens. Because history has to be looked at as like a very long game of telephone. You know, we try to get it right. We try to tell the stories right. But it, just like any other game of telephone, by the time you get to the last person, it's not quite what it was when it started. And a lot of factors go into that. But then some people deliberately tell lies. And we are taught lies. In school, we're taught lies. In church, we're taught that Jesus was a white man. He could not have been. If you believe he exists, he could not have been a white man, according to the story we're told. We're taught that George Washington chopped down a cherry tree. He chopped down nothing. We're taught that he had wooden teeth. He did not. He had slave teeth. And they tried to say that he paid the enslaved people for their teeth. And that don't even make no sense. That's another lie on top of a lie. And then we know these things are lies. And I came to these understandings on my own observations and study and all that kind of stuff. But it's not a concept that's unique to me. It's been written about. Jane Elliott has spoken about it at length and has told us the stories from her perspective of how these stories have affected us.
Victor Hugo said, "No force on earth can stop an idea whose time has come. The idea of one race, the human race, is an idea whose time has come. We are not going to be able to stop it, no matter what they do. They can elect Trump after Trump after Trump, and that will not stop the idea that there's only one race on the face of the earth. It's the human race, and we are all members of it. You and I are cousins. Now, if you don't like being my cousin, that's too bad for you. But we are all in the same family. We are members of the family of man." Nobody had dare say to me, "This doesn't work. This is too harsh. This isn't necessary. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, because they're wrong." You can teach an old dog new tricks. You can teach people to give up the myth of racism. Somebody taught the Greeks to give up the myth that the sun was a god in a golden chariot that went across the sky every morning. They believed that for hundreds of years. We have believed the myth of three or four races, different races in this country, for long enough. 572 years or something like that is enough of that.
A man named James Lowen wrote a book years ago called Lies My Teacher Told Me, where he goes into all of these fables and stories that we're taught and exposes them. He also wrote a book about sundown towns. And until then, sundown towns were places that Black people knew about and the people who lived in them knew about, but very few other people really understood. And basically, they're towns where all the Black people and non-white people have to be out of town by sundown, or really bad things can and have happened to them. They also were not just Southern phenomenon. They happened across the country. And so, again, these are the kinds of stories and lies we get told. Even George Washington Mount Vernon site tells lies. There's a public historian I found on TikTok. Well, I didn't find him. He was there. I just happened to stumble upon his content. His name is Tad Stormer, I believe. And he's a public historian, and his specialty is the Revolution. And he is hell-bent on exposing the myth of the Patriot lie, that people romanticize the Patriots and the Founding Fathers and totally miss the whole story. And some of his content has really opened my eyes and also aligned with what the impression I got just reading. We talked about George Washington. Now, he didn't have wooden teeth, but he was a slave owner who drank a lot and sanctioned rum and molasses smuggling and led an insurrection of like-minded patriots who didn't want to pay taxes on their booze either. And the Mount Vernon Digital Library goes into detail about that. It talks about, I'm on the Mount Vernon Library page, and it talks about the Molasses Act anticipated controversial British policies toward the colonies in the 1760s. In 1764, Britain passed the Sugar Act legislation that lowered taxation on molasses from sixpence per gallon to three, but encouraged the Navy to put an end to the smuggling that the settlers were doing. Upon discovering any contraband, the Navy was permitted to seize half the findings. Like his other prominent colonists, Washington interacted with rum in many aspects of his life. For instance, in order to win election in the Virginia House of Burgesses in 1758, he attracted voters with charm, entertainment, and rum. During his campaign, he supplied voters with 28 gallons of rum, 50 gallons of rum punch, and 82 gallons of wine, beer, and cider. He also used the drink to boost the morale of his soldiers. And it goes on to explain other aspects of how rum and sugar and the taxes that their government were imposing on them led to the revolution. It's a very interesting story, but it ain't got nothing to do with noblemen doing noble things. It's about guys who, you know, own land and own people. They were slave owners, quite a few of them, and they wanted to protect their money and not be told what to do. Not a bad story, but it's not the one they tell. In 2019, the 1619 Project was released, and it created a stir. And it really is the moment that set this MAGA thing from just funny, let's have Donald Trump to laugh at and fuck the libs, to something really serious. Because these truths were beginning to infiltrate the public school system. The school system was about to adapt some of their, adapt their curricula to include more comprehensive American history. That undermines the superiority of white men. They can't get around that, and that they can't have that happen because we have to maintain that superiority so that they can maintain their control over the masses. It's why Jesus is white. It's why only 8 people have all the money. It's a system of white male patriarchal domination and rule, Christian straight men. But that's a recipe for disaster. It's out of balance. There's no balance. There's no the women. It makes everybody else inferior and really suppresses the human resources that we have available. There are brilliant people who are Hispanic. There are brilliant women. There are little girls right now who can probably dunk on Jordan if they have the opportunities. And we're at a moment where we have a choice. Do we want to give all these people who have endured so much and contributed so much the opportunity to compete, to be involved, to be fully recognized as American citizens? And if that's what you want, then you just vote for the woman who upsets the entire apple cart. She exposes the lie that Donald Trump has exploited, the superiority of white men simply because they are white men. This woman outclasses him, outpaces him, is far more qualified than him on every level. There is no reason not to move forward, to take the country, not make the country great again. Make the country great, finally. Just vote. Okay, that's my comediosophy, and I come by that honestly. I got my degrees from the Warfield School of Comedy at MFU, which stands for Marsh Francine University, and UMF works too. And I am the world's foremost comediosopher and theologian. I founded the Church of Jesus. I will be giving sermons from the Book of Marcia. Here in the Marcia verse, things make sense to people who are not, who don't happen to be straight white men, who have other experiences, but are just as American and just as human as everybody else. So we are fortunate enough to have a sponsor. And our show this week, just like every week, is brought to you by Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings Ultimate Health Food, flavored air in a can. Aunt Karen knows that your family's health is almost as important to you as hassling black men and deporting brown immigrants. She also knows that you're not getting any younger, and those pounds you've put on are slowing your neighborhood hunts for law-breaking third graders selling lemonade on your cul-de-sac and dark-skinned foreigners stalking your pets for their family dinner down a lot. So Aunt Karen presents her latest line of Suburban Seasonings Ultimate Health Food just for you. Flavored air in a can. Delicious flavors, zero calories. With Aunt Karen's flavored air, you can feed your family a delicious guilt-free meal with all the fixings. Mix and match and heat and serve as many cans as you like with our patented pump and heat air share system. One kid wants frank and beans and tater tots. Just hook a beanie weenie casserole in an air can to a can of scraps of spuds casserole in a can via the special flavor tube and pump. Voila, one happy kid. Each dish is gluten-free with no GMOs, pesticides, or ingredients you can't pronounce, written in little tiny letters and long lists nobody can read or understand on the side of the can. But without that, you can let your imagination be your guide. And remember, just like you and the heroes you admire, Aunt Karen's Suburban Seasonings Ultimate Health Foods are chock full of hot air. We have a special guest this week, and this young man, I've seen him work. He's a very funny young man, and he's a good friend of my son's, and he's just got a list of accomplishments, you know, way long. He's done just about everything, and he's now on tour with Tisha Campbell, who I saw work do stand-up. She's doing stand-up, girls, working her ass off. I saw her in Martha's Vineyard. Anyway, her co-partner that's on tour doing Damn Gina is here tonight. Would y'all say hello to Finesse Mitchell? Hey, Finesse.
Sheologist, Jesus, FMFU. So, oh man, Marshall Warfield. What an honor, what a pleasure. And yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for staying up with us. You know, we're having a drink. Now, are you drinking with us?
I'm drinking a little bit with you. Yes, I am. Got my little Moscow Mule cup with me.
Okay. And you smoke?
Yeah, I'm smoking on a little cigar here. So, you know, I'm all ready.
There you go. You ready for this. Now, you started doing stand-up by what, 95, 90?
I think I did my first open mic in like 96, maybe.
Okay.
Just trying to win a joke contest at the Miami Improv down in Coconut Grove so that, you know, I don't know if it was Marvin Dixon or Chris Charles or somebody, but the host had said, if you have the best joke, you don't have to pay your tab tonight. And we were all broke because we got in there off of free tickets. But we didn't know there was a two-drink minimum or a two-item minimum. Okay. And we all had dates. So that was about to be a horrible night. And so I got on stage as the, you know, trying to win a joke contest. Everybody looked at me when they announced that whoever got the best joke, we'll pay your tab. Da, da, da. And my friends looked at me like, bro, take one for the team. You the funniest one in the group. So I just went up there and I just made something up off the top of my head. And I did a callback, which I didn't even know was a callback at that time in my, because I didn't know shit about comedy. But I did a callback to what the host had said earlier that night. And the crowd just went crazy. And he thought it was brilliant. He said, hey, man, come back next week. And that's what started my career, you know?
Okay. Now, in 95, 96, by that time, there had been a black comedy boom that had exploded with the, I've spoken about it before, with the advent of the Weblets, the studios starting their television networks, the WB and those networks. They needed content. Mm-hmm. And there was a pool of black comedians in Los Angeles and in New York, but the ones in Los Angeles that had pretty much been sparked by Robin Harris and Michael Williams. Mm-hmm. Robin said he was going not to start hanging around the Comedy Store or keep hanging around the Comedy Store like we were, but go back to the hood and start working those clubs. Mm-hmm. And since there wasn't none of them clubs, him and Michael Williams made it up. And so that gave everybody, even the young people who had the door kicked in for them by Pryor and Cosby and Flip Wilson, they were now in all of the industries and breaking the unions. And so they were in now black talent pools. Mm-hmm. And so all these shows started proliferating clubs. Black clubs, and the Soul Trains and the BET shows. My question to you, with all of that long hyperbole,
I enjoyed it all.
Is to ask you, did you start, and has most of your career been with black audiences or in the mainstream?
I think the blessing of it all was that, because I graduated from the University of Miami, so I was down there in Miami anyway. And so hanging out in the black clubs, I mean, Marsha, they was black. I mean, the blackest Jamaicans, the blackest Haitians, the blackest Cubans, you know. We had every ethnicity. We had the Caribbean, and then you just had Miami black. And if you know about Miami black, that's different from Atlanta black. So me being from Atlanta, you know, it was just it wasn't a culture shock, but Atlanta is black and white, and it was definitely super black and white back then. We got a bunch of Mexicans now in Atlanta and Latin people in Atlanta, but it was a culture shock because I had never seen so many beautiful shades of black people from all over the Caribbean. And then just, you know, I don't care if it was Puerto Rico, I don't care if it was, I don't know, the Bahamas, whatever, any type of island that was around there. They came from Belize, they came from Cayman, but everybody flooded that city. And it was just a good mix, you know? And so to be in the Miami Improv, you know, you didn't know who you were going to be in front of that night unless it was Black Knight. So yes, I started in mainstream, but I also started on Black Knight.
Was that a difficult adjustment to go from one to the other, and one had to be more predominant as far as your participation? You either work mainly white clubs or black clubs, so was it a big adjustment?
Not really, not at all. I kind of found it for me it was a little bit more difficult to make black people, the majority of black people, the people who will hang out in the comedy clubs. Because if you're going on Black Night, that's the black ass crowd. So and what they find funny, you know, and what they're used to and what they think comedy is. And back then, you know, Def Jam was big, but we also had our local stars who had already conditioned the crowd to what comedy was. So if you coming in there and your point of view is different, or you making fun about stuff they never even thought that, that could be funny, then there is a little struggle at first before people are like, ah, and then you start hearing this. You smart, man. You got that smart comedy. And I used to, at first, I'd be like, what? But yeah, you know.
Yeah, I get.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, you got real jokes. You got jokes and then another joke. And I'm like, ain't that how you do it?
Like watching you back in the day, you know, you would go on stage. Sometimes you drink, sometimes you smoke a cigarette. But everything about you said, oh, this is a black woman right here. But I would find that sometimes you didn't know what your audience or your fan base, or they didn't know what you was going to talk about. You could make anything funny. You could make any topic funny. You was, you know, that's why you ascended the way you did, because, you know, you one of the best that you're so versatile on which direction you could go in that I saw you make black funny. You know, black people just laughing their ass off. And then I saw a crowd or a room full of white people that would just laugh and just be captivated. And that's half the battle. Can you just hold people's attention? They just want to be in a room with you. And that's the power that comedians have when they get really, really good.
Oh, thank you. But I'm sure you know what you're talking about. You know, you had that going when I saw you. But now, when you started, let's go back there. You started, and then within a relatively short period of time, you were kicking ass and taking names.
I was out of there.
How did that come about?
My first TV appearance was, we didn't have Instagram. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have none of that. You had to be on Def Comedy Jam and or BET Comic View during my years in order for people to think you even really do comedy. And so everybody was trying to get on those shows. We had a lot of stages in South Florida, Miami Improv, Fort Lauderdale, a Hollywood Improv. We had West Palm Beach Improv. We had a bunch of clubs. We didn't have a lot of local comics. So we had the black comics coming down doing the Chitlin Circuit, or what we call the Chitlin Circuit, or just right. Black nights. But, you know, you can go down to Miami and make about $1,000 if you do the black night on Monday night, then this club on the night, and then the other club that got a comedy night, da-da-da. And that's how all the promoters would line it up so all the headliners could come down at the time. And so, I was just getting on stage a lot, and I wasn't taking my stage time for granted. Something didn't work. I'm either retooling it or I'm getting rid of it, but I'm not about to say it again. It didn't work. Okay. And so when I got my audition or my first appearance on BET Comic View, that's what really, I was just a new jack. So imagine just being a new jack, but you see the Cedrics and the Earthquakes and the D.L. Hughleys and everybody who came through that Comic View, some more, Cheryl Underwood, very funny people. And then you see this, you know, these young faces, and you'd be like, oh, okay, we got some younger, funnier cats, that, you know, funny cats. And that's what I just hit it. My first time on Comic View, Marsh, I hit it out the park, and they chopped up all my bits and made them into little clips. And then they would just play the clips on Clips Night, you know, with all the other people. So my first year really helped me at least get some face recognition. And then my second year I did it, it was like, okay, he's good. He, you know, that's two for two. I thought I was ready. I went to LA after that. I saw myself on TV twice. I said, Mama, that LA is calling. So yeah, I took my little $2,500 and moved to LA.
You're telling my story 20 years later.
That's you shot town, right?
I did the same thing pretty mm-hmm. much. And you hit me in my wheelhouse when you said Chitlin Circuit, because I've been on a rant these past few weeks about how the Chitlin Circuit was not just a specific period of time. It kind of describes our whole existence and in the shadows mm-hmm. Of the mainstream, and that it wasn't just it didn't just happen to us. Mm-hmm. We made things happen and made, as they say, it made a way out of no way, and they're still using those same techniques and attitudes and lessons that were learned back in segregation. So I call R&B and Black music, the soundtrack of segregation, because you can trace our whole history through our music and how it changes and how it changed the culture around the world.
That's why they don't make R&B for these young kids no more. They won't sign those artists. They won't promote them because they don't want us making that type of love music, you know, just a different point of view than what our kids are listening to right now, the majority of what they're listening to.
They can put it on TikTok if they want to. This is the beauty of this thing. You don't need anything. That's what makes it the chitlin' circuit. All you need is some albums. You know, they had albums in their trunk and they was at a roadhouse on this side of the tracks. And so they did their shows and sold their albums in the 50s and 60s and tried to get them played. They're still doing that. The kids did it with mixtapes. They're still doing this. It's how we made movies. It's how we made hair grease. It's how we did everything. And so
now the whole business has changed because now the chitlin' circuit is being independent and uploading to SoundCloud and Spotify and all these different places and letting your music link catch fire in your high school and then letting that link get passed around. And before you know it, you one of the biggest underground acts with this big following. And the labels don't know who this person is and how they got that big. But now they're trying to buy into their fan base because he already did all the work.
There you go. And these kids are growing up in it and knowing how to use it to their advantage.
And comedy's doing the same thing.
Without fussing and fighting, that's the beauty of it. If we just look around, we have the technology, we have the tools, we have the experience, we have the resources. Mm-hmm. And contrary to popular opinion, it is being done. It is being done. Millionaires are being made from home. I mean, without having to go mainstream.
We gonna find a way.
And so that's my whole mission, to celebrate that, to talk to other people who know what I'm talking about and can share their stories so that people can understand. You know, I don't know what you did before you started, but I was a switchboard operator. I'm from the south side of Chicago. I went to Calumet, didn't go to college kind of person. Mm-hmm. We are not born with silver spoons. Mm-hmm. Your talent can get you where you go if you know that there are paths. We didn't know those things. And so it's interesting and fun to talk to you about these things. You a family man?
Very much so.
You got
very it. Much so.
You Your got girl it. Dad?
Yes. Two little girls, 6 and 9.
Okay. They run the house?
Yeah, they in the house right now. That's why I'm
outside. I said they run the house.
Oh, yeah. They run. Hey, same answer. That's why I'm outside, because they run the house.
All right. Well, I'm sure they're adorable. And how long you been married?
I've been married for 11 years now. You know what I'm saying? Beautiful girl.
Oh, you was married and then had the kids.
I did it the right way. The traditional way.
I just wanted to point that out to all the people who are concerned about these. Oh, look at them. Goodness gracious. Yep. They're gorgeous. Congratulations. Thanks.
Yeah.
So what's
she said
next?
They mine, so...
You claim them. You can be proud.
I'm proud. I'm so proud.
What's next for you?
You know, I've been writing a lot. I wrote a feature script, and I'm really excited about it. So I got some people looking at it right now. And then I sold a TV show to Fox right out of the pandemic on a pitch, and ended up writing it. And then, getting a pilot. Warren Hutchinson was... my showrunner, and then they didn't pick up the pilot, so now I have the script back, and now I got some other famous Black comedians who are doing very well on CBS right now. He's looking at it. We'll see what happens with that. But outside of that, I stay on the grind. I always say on my hashtags on Instagram and TikTok and all that, Facebook, I always say we in them streets, because I feel like the minute you get too comfortable in your house and not going out to do sets, you kind of fade away until you just pop back up on the scene and you don't realize, man, you ain't been in a comedy club, just in the local comedy club, you know, in 10 years. Right. So it's like,
You just described my whole career. I was out for 20 years. I had to start all over again. I had to learn all over again. I did not know how to do stand up again. I had no chops. Went back to the clubs, went back to the bars, start all over again.
How about that though? Not a lot of us would do that.
Well, you know, because I saw people who had been away for a while try to start over again on TV. And it rarely worked. I mean, because, you know, this is a game of not just innovation and creativity and all that. It's practice. You got to be comfortable doing it. And you can't be when you just got up off the couch, hit the stage for the first time in 10, 20 years. So, right. But I have had such a ball talking to you. I don't want to let you go. I know my two sons, you know, my younger son.
Is your younger son the son that looked like the oldest son?
No, the oldest son is the one who looks like me. Still, okay. I think he must look like his daddy. Anyway, he is my problem child. And I know they have a couple of questions or comments they just want to direct at you. If you would just give us another couple of minutes, I would appreciate that.
I'm here for as long as you want to do it. I ain't got nothing to do. It's midnight.
Well, with that said, let me introduce my two sons. First, my oldest son, the one who looks just like me, who produces my Book of Marshall one-woman show, who does stand up without no clothes.
No clothes?
He's grown. Anyway, would you say hello to Stephen Roberts? Hi, Stephen.
Hey there.
How you doing? Hello,
honey? I'm good. Hi, Finesse. How are you?
I'm amazing, bro. I'm blessed.
It's great. I met you for the first time just several weeks ago at Jimmy Kimmel's. You were headlining for Kenan Thompson at his comedy club, and we were the next show after you. And I have to tell you, I got to speak with you for a few minutes, and I think I told you this, but I will say it again. It's like everything everybody said about you is true. Just such a nice, warm, respectable person, obviously a professional, and killing it in the room, absolutely killing it. And then they were a little late, so he jumped down off the stage after people were leaving and helped the wait staff clean up, because he went a little long, and he went there and he helped them clean up. That's the kind person he is. And that's the first time I met him. So it was such a pleasure. And it's a pleasure getting to meet you with my family.
Oh, dope. Okay. Thank you. You know, I forgot all about that. I did jump off stage and help. You know what? What the spirit say do it, I just do it.
Yeah, there you go.
You know what
there
I mean?
There you go. Well, let's bring out your friend, my son, my problem child. I love him to death. He just goes everywhere, and he shows him in your heart on his clothes. Say hello to Skills Hutchinson.
Hello. Good day, baby.
And good night.
Hey, y'all. What up, Bravo?
Where are you,
Hudson?
I'm here at right in front of the Kookaburra Lounge. I'm the only one out here at this mall area right here off Hollywood and Highland.
Oh, okay.
Security walked past me. He gave me a light for my blunt.
This is like a hood version of the news. And now we've gone to Skills out in the field that's going to describe to us what a street light is on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
Anyway, how do you know?
Marsha, go ahead. Yes. Go ahead, Skills.
Well, look, first let me say, because I'm getting a little emotional, not because of alcohol. I love Finesse. Look, Famo, when I met Finesse, you know what I'm saying, I already had watched him from afar, you know, as a up-and-coming comic. And when I had met him, he gave me an opportunity to perform with him at the Ontario Improv. Then that's where we first kicked it off at. And then got his contact, and I ended up, he taking me on the road with him to the Denver Improv. When I got back, my ex-wife, she told me that it was over, right? And that was Finesse.
This is a soap opera we watching right now. So yeah, your wife said it's over.
Not many people come home with a check and they still break up with them.
Okay.
Yes, this is one of my biggest first checks. I came back, she had cooked everything. I told her how it was. She was like, I can't do this no more. What? Wait a minute. What? She what no more. Hey, everything happens for a reason. And my friendship and famoship with Finesse, I've done so many shows with him. You'll say he's had so much conversation for me and so many good things. He's given me money. He's a good guy. He is. And
he gave me money when I'm in need. Go ahead.
No. What happened there?
Let me say this, Marsha, because it's not only his skills funny, he has that personality and temperament that you need. That's if you're on the road a lot and you want stuff to be on time, professional, you want somebody thinking about you and themselves instead of just their set, you know, Skills is top notch in that regard. He it's great having him around. He's just naturally funny off stage. He think he know how to roast and crack. It's, you know, I just entertain him. I just think he's special. You know, I know he rode the short bus in Chicago. I know his background. So, you know, for him to be a grown man, but to have the manners that he has, the drive that he has, it probably didn't work with his first wife because she realized that his first love was comedy. And a lot of women don't like competing with something that powerful. And like he said, everything happened for a reason. And you know, he always walking around with a smile on his face, even though he probably going to sleep right where he's sitting until it's time for him to get on a plane or a bus to go to Vegas.
He's resourceful.
He is resourceful.
Got to give him that.
Well, he probably already found a blanket out there.
Okay. His real wife is comedy.
We are all married to our career.
Yeah.
Anyway, Finesse, thank you so much for spending time with us tonight. I really enjoyed talking to you. You are welcome to come back here anytime you want to hang out, you know, anything you want to just talk about or just hang out. Come on back, you know, just give us a call.
Well, thank you, Marsha. Hey, I love you. I look up to you. I revere you. I've been a fan forever, and you know, there are so many people getting checks in our business because of your work, your dedication to the craft, and you not giving up. And I know it probably wasn't easy working with all those people, you know, at that time. And so, you know, when you're in front of a pioneer, you know, you just let them know that they're appreciated and that they're respected. And so thank you. I'd love to come back anytime, you know, you guys invite me.
Thank you. But I got to tell you, the first time I got to the company, the first night I got put on stage was by Tom Dreesen. I met Brad Sanders. I met Judy Tenuta.
Uh-huh.
The first night I went on stage. 2 years later, the first night I went to the Comedy Store. I met John Witherspoon, Paul Mooney, mm-hmm. and a week or so later, Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very, very Brett.
Here's the thing, like, we have names. None of our names match those names. So, you know, the 80s, you know, the 90s, you know, I never got the chance to meet Mitzi. I'm one of Jamie Masada's best friends. But one question I wanted to ask you before we go. Okay. Back then, who was your favorite white comedian, man or woman, that just always had love for you and was one of the people that was always like the most encouraging, not only thinking of themselves, but like thinking of you back then?
There are a bunch, but Tom Dreesen, like I said, Tom used to, Tom put me up on stage. It was first.
Classic guy, Steven, Tom Dreesen. He'd tell these Sinatra stories.
Yeah, so he put me up.
Marcia sent Skills and I to go see his show and arranged for us to have some time with him after his show at the Smith Center here in Las Vegas. So we've been blessed enough to meet him. And it turns out that Skills and Tom grew up in the same neighborhood.
And then Bill Miller. Mm-hmm. Bill Miller was in med school at that time. And he was studying to be a doctor and do a stand-up comedy. And he just retired from being a doctor and is pursuing stand-up comedy full-time now. And he, too, they used to drive me from the north side of Chicago to my house on the south side of Chicago. Okay. Bill had to go back to the north side. Tom went further south. But still... They were very, very helpful in nurturing my career. When I had a special on the Playboy Channel, stand-up comedy, I was a maverick. And yeah, so Tom Dreesen was the guest on the show, and we got to reminisce sitting on the stoop. And so there were so many guys, and even later on when the Night Court, Harry was amazing. John is still amazing as far as just being there, teaching me, showing me, accepting me. Mm-hmm. And it's a pleasure to work with and talk about all of them, any of them, anytime.
Richard Pryor, Bill Cosby, Red Fox. Who was the nicest?
Nicest. They were, you know, It's between Richard and Red.
Okay.
Richard was like, you know, cool like that. And Red was that, you know, Red was the motherfucker. He had to listen. But they both treated me like I was a real comedian. And that was such an ego boost.
How old was Red Fox when he got Sanford and Son?
Well, Red was
25.
16. What?
Huh? I said 25.
No, he wasn't. But he got Sanford.
It was a joke.
Let's see. He died in 90 or something like that, and he was 69. So he must have been in his 40s.
I saw something online where they put the age of everybody on the cast, and they had Red Fox 46 with the hair, and it's all gray and all. And I'm like, there ain't no way this man 46. But I guess
49. I just looked it up. 49.
If you saw Red on stage,
uh-huh.
Did you ever see him on stage?
Well, he had red hair and looking like a million
Red
bucks.
Was always clean as the board of health. He was, I mean, he was dapper. And so he was very erudite.
Yeah.
Okay. And he was a whole different person. But he's still.
Even if he was just coming to the Comedy Store, he'd still be like that, dressed like that?
I never saw him at the Comedy Store.
Oh, what was his club back then?
Red Fox.
Oh, he had
a nightclub, and he had a beauty salon and barbershop. Because back then, there were no black hairstylists. They couldn't get in the union. And so we all had to do our own hair, whatever. And he had that shop and helped to break that union and get people hired.
Did you have to audition to get Night Court, or did they just, they knew you and they wanted you on the show?
they knew me, and Brandon Tartikoff, who knew me from Chicago, and Rainey and I had a meeting. And so we smoked cigarettes and talked about Chicago. And he said, well, we still got to decide what we're going to do. But if we, you know, decide to go with you, we'll call you. By the time I got to the club in Seattle, they had called.
Nice. Nice.
So anyway, we could do this all night. We could do this all night. You go on and go on to bed before the babies wake you up in the morning wanting something that only you can give them. So
right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Come back anytime.
You got it. Skills, do not get in no van that say Diddy on the side of it. just stay where you at. If you in trouble, just call me.
Check me out.
Steven, good to see you again, bro.
Good to see you too, my friend.
All right.
Take care. All right, come on.
We are still talking about the Chitlin Circuit this next episode, and we're finding that it still has prevalence in our lives today.
Isn't it, it's so nice to be able to say, you know, that that you see things that are just obvious. And for so long, we don't get to see things because we don't get time to think about things. Now, our society is set up for you not to think. It's set up for you to do, and then take a nap and get up and do again.
Right.
So most people don't get a chance to consider all these things. But that being said, it's time for 2-minute rants.
Oh, boy.
So, Stephen.
Yes.
I know you got a rant.
You know what I do?
Will you please share?
Yeah, let's talk about orange cones. I don't know if I've rambled about this before, but I'm about to do it again.
Okay.
So we have a whole infrastructure going on in this country where we're repairing roads and bridges, and that's a very good thing. But I would like to ask the question, do we need to repair all the roads and bridges at the same goddamn time? You know, like maybe keep one road clear while you do another one? I mean, do we really need every single parallel street to be worked on at the same time? And by the way, if you're working up over here at the 300 block of Name Your Street, maybe we don't need to start cones over on the south side of that same equator. I mean, do we really need 700, 800, 900 blocks of cones before we get to the actual construction area? Why cannot we wait and then add? And why do we only need one? Like, oh my God. So they're going to put you down to 2 lanes and then put you down to 1 lane. And then you're going to be 1 lane until, you know, the troops come home. You know, what the? And then everybody gets, and then they're repairing the entire freeway. So, you know, choose your poison. Because it's going to be poison either way. Oh, I'm so mad.
But, you know, those orange cones, you got to use them or you just made the investment for no reason.
Somebody's brother owns an orange cone manufacturer. And he's getting paid by the cone.
I thought you were talking about ice cream at first. So, you know.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
My rant, Mark, is basically a rant that Famo Grossis Steven said about a month ago. It happened to me before, but it really burnt my ass, no pun intended, today when I was flying out here today. And that's when people, when we land and they get up and they just zoom like they want to get off, thinking like the door is already open and they can get off. No. And I usually don't say anything, but I had two individuals that invaded my space. There's one dude, I'm not going to say his nationality, but the stench he had coming off his body. The stench. And he was behind me, but his like lower part of his body was so close that I was smelling all these stenches coming from. Okay. Then it was this lady that had a pregnant body but wasn't pregnant. She gets up and she is her stomach was right here. Was touching my face. It was barely touching my face.
Oh my God. Touching.
And she reaching, grabbing her stuff, and another person was helping her, and his shit is right here. And I'm like, I'm living right here, y'all. It was really. I was so. Oh God.
Oh
yeah. I was thinking about you, Stephen, because I remember you saying, I was like, why is this happening to me right now when Stephen? This should happen to Steven and not me. It was happening to me.
Why me? Flight,
and I was in the
karma.
I had the other 2 seats to myself, Mom. I had the other 2 seats to myself. And so my flight was going good until that.
Okay. Well, my 2-minute rant is about DoorDash delivery. We have all become dependent on DoorDash deliveries now, you know, as a residual from the pandemic and COVID. And so they deliver to our homes for a substantial fee. But then, no matter what you tell them, they leave your food where you don't want it. I hate for my food to sit on the ground. Don't put my food on the ground. Especially if you haven't knocked or rang the doorbell or yelled Yahoo or something and let me know to come get my food. If you just come in and just, you know, I know you've arrived because you'll send me I've arrived. And then I don't get no doorbell ring. I'm like, what's going on? And I look outside, my food sitting outside like one of the three little bears or pigs or something, like some kind of damn nursery rhyme. And I got to find, what the fuck? I don't want tacos on the ground. You can tell me that it's all sealed up, but I don't trust you. I don't know you. And if you would sit my food on the ground, then what kind of person are you? And so I don't have to give you any respect. And why did you do that? It says in the thing, hand it to me, hand it to me. In order to hand it to me, you have to let me know that you're outside. Ring the doorbell, put it in my hand. I can't stand it. And do this after you've tipped them. And I usually tip them well because I want them to come to my house first. And so I try to tip them a little more than they asked for. And so now I've already tipped you substantially and you took my food and sat it on the ground. You are not, you should be fired and never ever deliver anything again. Okay, that's my rant.
I'm now, really glad we got to talk about our first world problems. National Dance Day.
Okay.
And every library in the country will have a space for dancing and special guests, and there will be a time for music and dance on this day, and the post office is closed and the banks are closed and everybody gets an opportunity to go dancing.
Okay.
Right off the top of my head. It's either that or Puppet Day. I think Dance Day would do much better.
Puppet Day, Puppetry of the Penis Day.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Whatever floats your boat.
Penises have never floated. Anyway.
Hey, you haven't been to my house.
Skills. What fun thing would you introduce as president?
A smile-a-thon.
Oh, that's good.
Okay.
You know, both your boys have pretty smiles.
That's true. That's true. I do good work.
I don't know about all that, but I know me.
Well, I don't know what kind of fun thing I would introduce. I think I would try to introduce National Moms Cooking Day.
Ooh. I would show up for that.
Everybody gets one home cooked meal, special home cooked meal that day. Oh, and all the fixing, the kind you wish mom made every day, but only got every once in a while, like on your birthday.
That's nice. Yeah. Put the moms to work for an extra day.
I know. I just made it up. How about Magic Moms?
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, what the hell? We have been talking about the Chitlin Circuit and Black music. And so I've been checking out documentaries and stories relative to the era that basically makes the transition from R&B to rock and roll. And that era, because it's just far enough away to really be history, but some I have some kind of familiarity with, and it serves as a launching pad into where we are now. And I watched one about Chicago's R&B scene in the 50s and 60s, and it was narrated by Etta James, that talked about Record Row. There was we had an area where all the record labels were that churned out all of the hits that came out of Chicago. It's very interesting and fun. If you get a chance, put the link in the comment. We will put the link in for you to follow. And there was another one called Streetlight Harmonies that traced doo-wop throughout that era, because, you know, there was more than one influence that swept that time. We can talk about different directions that the music went. That's a really good documentary to watch. And so we'll keep plugging along in that direction, because there's so many more stories to be told. What are you doing, Skills?
I'm doing some car mess. There's air out here, man. I'm outside, man.
We're going to let you go inside somewhere. We get ready to close these festivities. So you can go somewhere.
The Marshall verse is everywhere.
That's right. But you can go in the Marshall verse someplace, you know, warm and inside. Hit a cup of coffee, whatever the hell. But thank you. I love seeing you every week. Thank you for coming. And
thanks, Mom, for having us.
And you want to tell people to
like, share, subscribe. Comment, subscribe.
Oh,
dance.
And
listen to
why
the playlist.
Why do we want them to do that? We want to get our numbers up so we can bring more and more and better. Tonight is our 19th show. We're going to be doing our 20th show next week. We're chugging along. We're the little that could. And so hopefully we can do our Chitlin Circuit duties and make this thing what we want it to be.
Yeah, tell friends, tell your mom, tell your dad.
Tell your ma, tell your pa. I'm going to send them back to Arkansas. All right. Anyway, and remember, next week, next Tuesday, is the biggest election you've ever participated in. If you haven't gotten your vote in yet, I voted yay, and I'm glad I did. But if you haven't, you have.
Are we doing the show?
Yep. As if you haven't voted here in Nevada, you have until tomorrow, I believe, or until tomorrow or Friday. Check online to early vote.
But then if you don't early vote, get in line and make your voice heard. And
October 30th is the last day you can early vote in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay. And remember, nobody has to know how you vote, not even your husband. So if he's a Confederate flag wearing Trumpster and he wants you to vote against Kamala Harris, tell him, okay. But when you get in that booth, think about your rights, think about your daughters, think about your future, and think about what it would mean to elect Kamala Harris. And then let your conscience guide you. And then when you come out, just tell him, yes, dear. And he'll be happy, and so will you. So, thank you. Get your vote on. Did you vote, Stephen?
Yes,
I'm voting tomorrow.
Okay, I voted. Skills voted. Earlene, did you vote? Earlene says yes, she voted.
We're voting tomorrow.
Oh, you're voting tomorrow. So everybody, tell everybody. Tell them we should ask Finesse. Make sure everybody gets out and votes. It's that important. I love you. Thank you so much. And come back next week. Who's our guest next week? Can you hear me?
Adele Givens and George Wallace.
Ah, ooh, hey. So next week, we have a twofer. We have Adele Givens.
My girl, Adele!
Adele, yes, Adele. Another Chicagoan. Can't wait to talk to her. And
beautiful smile.
George Wallace will be back.
Second appearance.
Yes, and we're going to talk about our upcoming shows in at Tommy T's in Pleasanton, and we're going to just talk about the election. He's a very big pro-Kamala fan, and we're just going to talk about this whole new world we're about to step into. So make sure you come back. Enjoy this show. If you like it, go back and check some of the old ones out. And give us ideas you might have for new ones. We probably won't do it, but we'd love to hear about it. So just let us know. And I'm going to bed. Thank you. Good night. Oh, can we still keep going? I have one more thing.
Yeah, it's still going.
Children, my children.
Yeah.
Where are you working? What are you doing? What you got coming up?
I'll be at Puppetry of the Penis next week, in first week of November, and a couple of weeks throughout there. And then I'll be at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club at right in the middle of Thanksgiving week here in Las Vegas at the MGM.
All right. Skills, what you doing?
This Friday, well after I leave in the morning, come back to Vegas. Catch me this Friday, Jimmy Kimmel's first Shoulder Skills Friday. Then next week, I'll be in Cleveland with Lunel at the Funny Bone. And Stephen Roberts will be in Shoulder Skills.
All right. Well, I'm so glad I had that. I'm so glad we had this time together. And I'm so glad that I had the time for you to tell us where you'll be so people can find you, because I know they will fall in love with you again. What are you doing?
It's chilly out here.
I'll see y'all later. Y'all take it easy. You'll find this can of Sterno.
Oh my God. You're going to set your phone on fire just for this joke.
Can do it like that. Her own style, no one can wear that hat. Hey, don't you know that the queen is back? She's back, she's back. She withstands the test of time. When it comes to strength, she comes to mind. Get down, she gets back up again and again. I'm talking about Marsha.